Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Now, go ahead and ruffle the papers. Good morning.
Hey, I'm just checking out my story here.
I mean, man alive, that's disconcerting when you hear this in the background going...
Yeah, I didn't hear it. How you doing today, Zeb?
I'm good.
Good.
I hope everything's warm enough for you.
Just warm. We played on the river yesterday a little bit.
I was not invited.
Well, your phone was busy.
Might have been, but I heard you start up the boat.
Oh, okay. Well, next time we go, you're going to have to come down and go for a ride.
You're going to have to promise that.
All right.
You live right on the river, don't
you? Yeah.
That's what I thought. I've been by your place.
Yeah. Between Burley and Declo.
Yeah. Beautiful area.
Love it over there. Yeah. So.
And the river changes a lot of depth right through there, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because on my side of the river, there's a stretch where it's quite deep, and it works, and then it swings over to the other side.
And it's quite shallow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a channel.
Yeah,
through
really.
Yeah.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about the Alamo.
Oh,
battle.
One of my favorite parts
yes.
of history.
And so the question is, was there a coward at the Alamo?
Now, history has changed things a little bit.
It has.
And there was supposedly a coward at the Alamo, and then there was also a couple of people that were told they could leave.
Okay. Well,
Go ahead. We're
going to talk about this guy.
Okay.
So let's go back to March 3rd, 1836, and that one man decided to leave the Alamo and escape a certain massacre, and a massacre that actually took 182 men. And they knew they were going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So March 6th, shortly after 9 a.m., General Santa Anna, president of Mexico, rode into the courtyard of the mission of San Antonio. The last shot had just been fired, the last bloody bayonet just withdrawn, and all about him lay dead bodies. They hung from the walls. They lay across cannons. They were up on the rooftops. But all the defenders, 182 Texans, Tennesseans, British, Irish, and Scots, were dead. They were all dead.
But don't you think this would be an appropriate place to also mention those 182 defenders of the Alamo, they took a huge toll on Santa Ana.
1,600.
Yep.
They killed 1,600. And these were the top, these were the elite Mexican army. But the surviving Mexican soldiers were spent. They were tired because they'd been fighting since midnight. They'd been going all day long in that heat. But, you know, although it had been bitterly fought for and expensively attained, there's never been any doubt of the outcome. But there was, for some reason, there was really no joy in their victory. For some reason, they just...
How could there be?
Yeah.
How could
there
be?
So with all the dead, you know. Anyway, in fact, there was a fellow by the name of Francisco Alcaide of San Antonio, and he identified the bodies of the Texan leaders. Okay, he found the commander, Colonel William B. Travis, lying across his cannon. James Bowie was on his cot in one of the upper rooms in the barracks, surrounded by dead Mexicans. And after considerable searching, he found David Crockett, and he was found at the entrance to the church, and again, almost buried under a pile of the Mexican soldiers.
Let me ask you right there, though, Doctor, with all the historical, so-called historical reports of what happened and who died where, etc., has history kind of collided with Hollywood? Is everything that we see and hear fairly accurate?
You know, it's been a long, long time since I've seen the movie about the Alamo, and I really don't remember. So, you know, I go by things like this where I feel like this is an accurate depiction of what happened. Now, there were some survivors that were permitted to live. There was a Mrs. Dickinson, and she was wife of one of the officers,
right.
Her young daughter, and two servant boys, and they were spared. Now, at Santa Anna's order, all of the rebels' bodies were sandwiched with layers of logs and then burned. So they cremated all of the body. And
that part was in the 1970s portrayal of the Alamo with John Wayne.
And then the 1,600 dead Mexican soldiers were buried, and actually they threw some into the San Antonio River for whatever reason, I don't know, but... I think they kind of wanted to erase this part of history.
Yeah.
So, anyway, through the succeeding years, historians searched for information concerning this final onslaught, and they found, you know, there's some kind of biased opinions, especially if you take Santa Ana's own official report, which is quite inaccurate according to the historians.
And he was a coward.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end.
Yes. There's another whole story about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, not kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, even the identity of all the Alamo defenders is kind of indefinite. There's monuments bearing their names, one in San Antonio and one in Austin, Texas. And there's actually different names on each plaque. But during the 50 years, evidence has been uncovered confirming as a fact that a legend that one man left the Alamo just before the last attack. And okay. That's the guy we're going to talk about. So his story has kind of become a new page in history, which records in detail events immediately preceding the final assault by over 5,000 Mexican soldiers against this little mission. 182, 5,000 of the best Mexican soldiers.
It makes you wonder how.
Yeah.
How could 182 people stave off for, what was it, 13 days?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But anyway, his escape through the Mexican army lines across miles of hostile country to his home in East Texas is described, and newly discovered actual court records and letters tell of his life, his attempts to live after he deserted the Alamo.
Okay.
And it wasn't pleasant. But the Alamo had been, as we said, 10 days under siege, 10 days of hope for relief or assistance. And, you know, at last the men within its walls were informed that, you know, it was hopeless. Their commander, Colonel Travis, he's assembled all of them in the courtyard and for the first time revealed the facts. And this is the thing that stuck out in my mind about that old movie, okay? In a stirring speech, he told them that the opposing soldiers were the cream of the Mexican army. No assistance was coming to the Texans, as none was available, and it was too late to accept Santa Ana's surrender terms.
Right.
So, Travis said an escape was impossible. But he said a lot of you would be slaughtered if you tried to leave, and his personal decision was to die fighting in the Alamo. Now, here's the thing that I always remember about this. He drew his sword, scratched a line in the ground across the courtyard. He asked that those willing to stay with him cross the line, and it was kind of a tense moment.
Absolutely.
I mean, knowing if you stepped over that line, you're done.
You're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, most of the men were not Texans, some not even Americans. They were hunters, traders, farmers. A few were soldiers. One was a professional politician.
Yeah.
None wanted to die, but it was obvious that something projected by Travis's speech compelled them to cross the line to accept the inevitable death.
You know, and right there, if you put that in terms of today and how the American mind has changed in this country for what we lived for, died for, and hold in great reverence, I wonder how many people would stay today.
That's a great question. And, you know, I've read a lot of war stories about our soldiers even today in Iraq, Afghanistan, and there are truly amazing, brave
yep.
men.
Yeah.
And
but if you took a potpourri of the people that were at the Alamo, like you said, politicians, hunters, people that were not military.
Right.
How many would stay?
Yeah. And, you know, bravery is something we don't know about until we are confronted with a situation.
Amen.
And I don't know how you are, but I've always pictured myself as being, yeah, I'll be there. I'll be brave, but
you have to be confronted with the situation
right, before you can say
right.
Okay, so one man resisted this appeal. He was the only man remaining on the far side of the line, and he was overcome by his emotion. He sank to his knees, buried his face in his hands, and he had decided to try to stay alive. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
His name, Louis Moses Rose. That's his name. We're going to talk to I'm going to just call him Moses. Moses Rose.
Okay.
He was actually born in France in 1785. It was a turbulent time. He actually, this was the time of Napoleon, and he actually joined the French army and to fight with Napoleon. He was in the army, and he stayed until Napoleon was deposed. And later, he was actually expelled from France and immigrated to the United States. And he made his way out to Louisiana, where he spent a few peaceful years.
Wow.
Now, Louisiana's western neighbor, which of course is Texas, was at that time part of Mexico.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
But it was inhabited by a rapidly growing colony of Americans, and as the American population increased, so did their desire to be independent. So several minor revolutions had been attempted, but were quickly squashed by the Mexican army. I mean, Santa Anna had the best of soldiers. So in 1826, one of these revolutions managed to get the town of Nacogdoches. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Nacogdoches.
Nacogdoches.
Yep, been there many times.
Okay.
Yep.
Which was then the largest settlement, actually, in Texas.
Yep.
And in the army was the French veteran Moses Rose, and he was recruited in Louisiana. And the uprising was soon put down by the Mexican troops, and Rose found himself again mustered out of another army. Now, Rose decided to stay in Nacogdoches. And eventually became employed by a guy, and his duty was to maintain a freight wagon between Nacogdoches and, now help me with this one, Nacogdoche.
How do we know? But how do we know all the different entries in history about this man? How did they get this all recorded about
him? I'm going to get to the end, and I'll tell you how that happened. It's kind of an interesting way that this has been recorded.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll get to that. So, anyway, he carried mail between these two towns, and probably the most responsible position he ever held in his life. But in 1832, he joined another Texan Revolutionary Army and was placed under the command of Colonel Jim Bowie.
Oh, my.
Okay. And with this army, he again marched to capture Nacogdoches from the Mexicans. The Texans were victorious this time. They drove the Mexicans out of town. And at the close of the battle, Rose was one of a group of 20 men under Jim Bowie who were ordered to pursue the retreating Mexicans.
Okay. So this guy was, his past, a fighter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just before nightfall, they found the enemy. And the Texans opened fire on them, and the Mexicans took cover, and they returned the fire. Three Texans were killed. The next morning, the Mexican commander, thinking that he was besieged by the entire Texan force, he surrendered his company of 310 men
to
20. So it became widely known that Moses Rose had distinguished himself in this action. So, you know, here he is, one of 20 that bring in these 310 guys.
Yeah, really.
So anyway, his part in the battle also resulted in his becoming a good friend of Jim Bowie, which later drew him into the Alamo. Well, after the fight for Nacogdoches, Moses Rose settled down to a domestic life. He put down his gun, picked up an axe. He went to work in a sawmill. Eventually, he acquired some land and actually became a settler.
Did he have a family?
No, he did not. He never married, according to what we have here. But once again, the war drums began to roll in about 1835, and a call was made to all Texans to enlist in an army to drive the Mexican army from San Antonio.
Right.
Now, I've never been there, Zeb, but that's on my bucket list. I want to get down there to the Alamo.
It's a beautiful city.
Okay.
It is a beautiful city.
So, anyway, Rose joined his old commander, Jim Bowie, and marched with him to San Antonio. Now, Colonel Bowie assumed command and moved all of his followers to this small mission at the edge of town. Rose unrolled his bedroll inside the walls of the Alamo, and so thus this Frenchman found himself at the scene of his last part of a small revolutionary army, representing kind of an unstable government. I mean, this was kind of a, what do you say, unstable time in with the army, the government,
absolutely.
Everything. So,
well, there was the fight for independence away from Mexico, and quite frankly, there were a lot of people that were Americans per se that sided with Mexico at that time.
Yeah. So this was kind of a questionable whole thing here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fall of the Alamo has been told a lot of times. And the important fact of the siege is that, mainly we know, 182 men withheld an army of over 5,000 for about 10 days. Santa Anna was determined to obliterate this makeshift fort. It wasn't a fort, you know.
Oh, it was a church?
Yeah. And he was willing to utilize his entire army to do it. to take this. And again, pictures, and you've been there, I guess, but it's a small
place. It's nothing. I guess Hollywood has made it a lot larger than it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, after 7 days of bombardment and attack, the new Alamo commander, which by now was Colonel William Barrett Travis,
right,
he realized that the end was near, and this is when he made his speech,
right,
the famous speech. And
right,
again, that's the one that stands out in my mind as a historical event. But anyway, so here's Moses Rose standing on the other side of the line. And Jim Bowie looked at his old friend, Rose, and he said, "You seem not to be willing to die with us, Rose." And he said, "No." And he was really emotional. You know, this was tough. He says, "I'm not ready to die, and I will not if I can avoid it." So, you know, you can't hardly blame the guy in some respects. In some respects, right?
Yeah.
Now, Davy Crockett was there, and he stared at him, and he remarked, "You may as well conclude to die with us, old man, because escape is impossible." Now, consider, they're surrounded.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how are you really going to escape if you really want to?
Yeah.
Anyway, at mid-afternoon, in full view of the Alamo, this mid-afternoon, during the day, in full view of the Alamo garrison and the Mexican pickets outside, Moses Rose climbed the Alamo wall. On top, he was momentarily stunned at the scene of death below because the ground was littered with dead Mexican soldiers.
It was, yeah.
But anyway, he managed to jump down off the wall, and he headed west to the San Antonio River, which I don't think is too far from there, is it?
No.
Pretty
no,
close.
No.
Anyway, he waded across the shallow ford.
Now, wait a minute. Right there, a lot of people are probably saying, where were the Mexican army at that time?
Yeah. And that's
why didn't they stop him?
And that's something I'm not quite sure how he managed this, okay? Well, of course, he wouldn't be wearing a uniform.
Well, they didn't offer any amnesty or any nothing to these people.
No, but somehow he waded across the river. Now, the Frenchman suddenly realized that he was in full view of some Mexican pickets, so they must have been kind of scattered around a little bit there. But instinctively, he turned into the town of San Antonio, which offered the only immediate shelter. Now, the Mexicans unaccountably allowed him to go unchallenged. And they think partly is because this guy was kind of a dark-skinned guy, kind of swarthy-looking, and he spoke Spanish. And so I think maybe they thought that he was Mexican. And that's my only conclusion as to how he was able to get through.
Amazing.
Anyway, he hurried through the old plaza. Rose was aware that the town seemed deserted. All the doors were closed and no one was on the streets. And about a quarter mile out of town, he heard the renewal of the Mexican bombardment on the Alamo. See, he knew they were getting hit.
Right.
So by now it was dark, and he was wandering through the dark with the prickly pears, and he got pierced by these thorns. I mean, it was rough going. But in spite of this, he kept going, and I know we're getting out of time here, Zeb, so I just want to finish this up.
You know, we might have to have a continuation next week with what happened at the follow-up battle.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll just finish up his story. But, you know, he kept walking, and most of the homes in Central Texas had been deserted by families because they were trying to get away from the Mexican army.
Right.
Well, Rose stayed at several of these vacated cabins, and it was several days before he finally managed to get to a home that had people in it. And when he made his next stop, it was at the home of a guy named Zuber, and he startled his friend by being alive because they thought he was dead. Now, this is where how we know what happened, Zeb. At the Zuber's home, Rose received his first care for all the thorns and stuff that was in his legs and one thing or another. But he told his friend the full story. Now, Mrs. Zuber had him repeat the account until she had it memorized word for word. Okay. Now, some months later, her son William, released from the Texas Army, returned home and was told the story, and he promptly recorded it and left the only written record of what had happened on the third and last day in the Alamo, as told by this man, this Frenchman, Moses Rose.
So basically, we can be almost like 95% sure that what happened happened.
Right. Yeah. Now, the bad thing about this guy is that there was a lot of people that were upset with him because they feel like he deserted their husbands and their sons, and he was abused basically by the people somewhat. And anyway, he made his way back to Nacogdoches, and
he'd have been better off to leave the area.
He
entirely.
Really should have, you know. And he actually died penniless. He didn't have any money.
Yeah.
You know, he must have wondered a few times, you know, did I make the right decision? And ironically, though, his name is actually listed on some of these monuments as being a one of the people killed at the Alamo.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And really, the only place that's accurate is his gravestone in a little place called between the towns of Alto and Rusk, Texas. Ever heard of those? Probably tiny places.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's an inscription on the marker. It just basically says Moses Rose.
And that's it.
That was his story. And
when did he die? Do you have that?
The
Battle of the Alamo was 1836. And
yeah,
I was just curious.
1860 looks to be about the time that he died.
So about 24 years later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll be darned. Moses Rose.
Yeah, and again, when you think of bravery, you know, well, here's three guys right here.
Yeah.
Jim Bowie, Davy Crockett, and Travis.
What about, quickly, I've only got a minute, and then I got to do a commercial break before the bottom of the hour. The claims against Davy Crockett and his attitude at the Alamo. You've heard these stories.
Yeah. I like heroes, you know, and I tend to think that Davy Crockett, I sang his song all the time when I was a kid.
Davy Crockett.
And Jim Bowie. I mean, you know, these guys just are heroes in my book.
I like to think so, too. Doc, thanks. That was an excellent report on that.
Thank you.
Let's do the follow-up next week as to what happened at the Battle of San Jacinto.
I've got that.
Okay, good.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.